Golf Smarter, number 265, published on January 11, 2011.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The 15 gates of golf and the keys to unlock them with Jim Waldron.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast. This episode of Golf Smarter is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Well, here we are in a new year and the PGA Tour has already begun their season, which means it's time for you and I to start thinking about our own new year of playing, not watching golf. And I can't think of a better way to get things started than to have one of the most interesting guests that has ever joined us on the Golf Smarter podcast in the past. Now, it's an interesting story. Jim Waldron of the Balance Point Golf School wrote me to say that he's been working on a new book called The 15 Gates of Golf and the Keys to Unlock Them. He's having a serious case of writer's block. So what I did was to invite him to come on the show and just let it go. Just start to verbalize what you're thinking so that maybe we can unlock it for him. We can come to some new realizations or break down the wall that's preventing him from finishing the book. The result is a multi-hour conversation, about an hour and a half of it that was recorded that I wanted to share with you. Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Jim.
Thank you, Fred. It's great to be back on your show.
And it has been a while. You've been on two other times. First time in August. Back in December of 2007, we were first introduced to the Balance Point Golf School. And then again, August of 2008. So it's been a couple of years since we've had a chance to talk to you.
Exactly. A lot of catching up to do.
Right. Now, I just want to let everybody know if there's a hum that you're hearing, that's because Jim is now using Skype, so we can have a nice clear connection, but he's also running on a very old laptop that doesn't even have a battery, so he's plugged into the wall in his teepee. Now, you live in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yeah, I live up in Wallowa County, up in the northeastern corner of Oregon. There's a mountain range called the Wallowa Mountains, and I live in the Alpine Valley. It looks like Switzerland. In fact, the local Chamber of Commerce calls it the Switzerland of America.
Must be beautiful.
We got about 6 inches of snow in the ground. I'm looking at two 10,000-foot-high mountains right out my office window as we speak. It's pretty cool.
But that's not where you teach golf. You travel. You have golf schools. The Balance Point Golf Schools are where?
Our main location is just outside of Portland, Oregon, and I teach there about 2.5 weeks out of the month from May through October. That's my busy season. But that actually, to get to Portland for me, because I live in this such a remote area, it's a 6.5-hour drive.
Oh, my gosh.
So I keep a rental apartment in Portland during those summer months and then do the trip once a month and spend 2.5 weeks and drive back. I do a little teaching here, not much, because obviously it's a really small community. We only have 7,000 people living in this valley in four very small towns. But there's always stuff to do when I'm here at home when I'm not actually doing a lot of teaching. There's always golf research and writing and DVD editing to do and so forth.
And
so.
Building fires and boiling water.
Exactly. And then in the winter, I'm lucky enough, I get to live on the north shore of Oahu for about 4 months, so January through April, and teach over at Ko'olina, one of the best golf courses on Oahu. Mm. And then my off season is kind of the fall, November, December. And I have gone to Asia a couple of years ago. I spent a month in Singapore teaching there. And this coming fall of 2011, I'll be back in Asia. We're calling it the Balance Point Asia Tour. And I'll be doing schools in Thailand, China, and Singapore for about 6 weeks.
Phenomenal. Yeah. So it's kind of golf heaven. but you don't really play a lot of golf. You're just teaching all the time.
No, actually, I don't play as much golf as I used to when I was younger. I've got this sort of chronic low back issue, which keeps me from playing as much as I like to. But
yeah, we know that.
I play a little bit in the summer. Summer's my real summer. I'm real busy, but I play quite a bit actually in Hawaii. I probably play about 3 rounds a week, maybe more when I'm in Hawaii. Yeah, that's my golf play time is when I'm over in Hawaii.
Mm. Yes, indeed. Let's go to Hawaii and play. Sounds wonderful. Now, because there's a lot of Golf Smarter listeners who have yet to be introduced to your stuff, and then to refresh the memory of those who've been listening for a while, give us an overview of what your vision of Balance Point Golf School is about.
Well, you know, I call it Balance Point for a number of reasons, but I guess if I had to pick one, I'd say, I'll pick two. One is the Buddhist idea of the middle way, avoiding extremes. And I think, in fact, one of those two previous podcasts, I talked about what I call the fallacy of extremes, which is a logical flaw. If you took like logic 101 in college, they'd probably cover the fallacy of the extremes, which is that it's either black or it's white. You know, it's in the world we all live in, that's sometimes true, but usually not. And so what the Buddha talked about is a way of sort of, approaching the early stages of spiritual practice and sort of what one of my former Buddhist teachers called practicing basic sanity, was to avoid the extreme, try to find the middle way. And so that's part of it. And the other part, of course, is that I think that physical balance, particularly in the golf swing, we call it the supreme fundamental. So it means other things as well, but that's the basic idea. It also means that it's the approach that we have to teaching the game is based on the mind-body connection model, as opposed to just the body or just the mind. It's always both. So we're always teaching the mental aspect of the game when we are working on, say, full swing mechanics. And there's also a physical component most of the time when you're working on the pure mental side. So we are, after all, mind-body creatures. We're not just all mind or all body. So that's the mind-body connection approach.
And it's so important for golf.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, it's unbelievably important. There's a whole fairly new science called neurophysiology, which is the science of the mind-body connection. How do the brain and the body communicate with each other? And how does that impact how one learns motor skills, movement pattern skills like any sport, particularly golf?
In your golf schools, you've seen such a range of golfers, for the average golfer, for the middle handicap golfer, it's so interesting because I'm starting to find out and communicating with a lot of listeners and playing golf with people and getting a chance to talk to them, that you can really be a middle handicap golfer. And we're talking about the, 13 to 18, 13 to mm-hmm. 20 handicap range.
Yeah.
You could be that as somebody who's been playing a year or two or somebody who's been playing most of your life. Some people just have a difficult time getting past that, but still approach the game as if I'm going to beat this thing, which is a beautiful part of golf.
Yep. I love that part of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing about it, there's so many ways to get better. I mean, when I first started doing my research, really serious, which is started back in about, it's been almost 30 years now, late 70s when I really got into it. Started teaching in 1990. But, one of the first things I discovered when I started studying this huge game of golf, the mental game, the mechanical game, the physical fitness aspect, the thing that blew my mind was, number one, there's so many ways to get better that work. And number two, very, very, very few people know about them, which kind of blew my mind. Like, why aren't people getting better?
Right.
And, gets back to this book that you and I talked about via email. This my new book's called The 15 Gates of Golf and the Keys to Unlock Them.
And we'll get into that in just a minute. Yeah. Well, I'm definitely leading up to that.
Sure. So there's a body of knowledge that is out there. It takes a little bit of seeking to find it out, but it's definitely there. There are so many ways to get better. I mean, if you're not getting better, if you're a serious player and you're trying to get better and you're not getting better, you're doing something wrong. not that golf is an easy game. It's not. It's one of our big principles. It's a very, very, very difficult game for all kinds of very logical reasons. But if you're serious about, if you're not a social golfer who plays once a month, you know, once a month just for business reasons or whatever, but if you're serious and you play fairly often and you kind of got the bug and you're reasonably healthy, then you should be getting better at the end of the season. You should be a better player at the end of the season than you were at the beginning of the season.
But when you that's an interesting concept, because that seems to be my case. I mean, I'm very lucky to be able to talk to so many different golf instructors and golf professionals. And as my season progresses, I definitely get better and feel more comfortable and more excited. But then as things slow down, and for me that's really when we lose daylight savings time, because I like playing at the end of the day. So I play infrequently during that off period and the off season. And then I start again. It seems like I'm not where I left off. I start all over again, and it's just this cycle each season. It's like start at, you know, one place and get better, and then go all the way back again.
Yeah, yeah. And there's some logical. Yeah, there's some logical. Well, you know, I hate to use the term muscle memory, because muscles don't have memory, but there is that sense that you can lose the feel for your golf swing or lose the feel for your short game or putting stroke just from lack of use. And you know, there's a part of this body of knowledge that's going to be in the new book we talk about is that, you know, there's a saying on tour, the top players in the world have a saying about, you know, losing the feel. I mean, they're deathly afraid. Most of them, vast majority of tour pros, are deathly afraid of having even a single day go by without at least picking up a club and taking a few practice swings.
Their off season is so short. I mean,
a short off season. You know,
here we are in November, and we just finished the last competition of the season. And they're already starting about, and it starts up again in January. So what, they get a month and a half where they're not in season on the tour?
Yeah, it used to be, years ago, it was about 2.5-3 months. Now it's getting to be where it literally is. It's about 6 weeks. I think the last official event, between the last official event and the first event in Hawaii at Kapalua, is about five or six weeks. So yeah, it's pretty short. Yeah.
The only season that's longer is professional wrestling.
Yeah, exactly.
they don't take a week off. It's 52 weeks a year. Yeah. They're on the road and they're pounding away.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't want to get into professional wrestling, because I can go on for a while about that. And I just want to remind everybody that as we continue talking, this is a Skype phone call, there's this hum that I've worked very diligently at trying to eliminate, and sometimes the signal may go in and out. And if it gets bad, Jim and I will stop recording. I'll call him back, and we'll start again. So if I notice that we're losing content, we'll correct it. So just know that there may be an edit in there. Yes, there may be an edit in there, but not many. But let's take a short break to say that this episode of Golf Smarter is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For Golf Smarter listeners who have yet to give Audible a try, Audible would like to give you a free audiobook so that you can hear for yourself how great the experience of reading an audiobook can be. With this offer, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter and choose any audiobook from their vast library. Now, one audiobook that Jim should consider, and if you're a writer, you may want to listen to this as well. It's a new book that was released in December of 2010. It's called Accidental Genius, Using Writing to Generate Your Best Ideas, Insight, and Content by Mark Levy. Again, try any audiobook you'd like as your free choice today. Just make sure when you do it, you go to audiblepodcast.com. Audible is spelled AUDIBLE. audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. All right, now, this blew me away. You wrote to me saying, it's been a long time since we've talked. I've got this idea for a book. I'm working on a new book, and it's not written yet, tell me. And so I thought how much fun it would be for us, you know, and I know I'm going to get emails going, when's the book coming out? When's the book coming out?
Sure.
It's not written yet.
Not written yet, no.
So let's spend as much time as we can, and if we need to make this two episodes, then we'll make it two episodes. But I would love to be able to allow you to sit back in your most comfortable chair right now, close your eyes, and verbalize your thoughts on this book, and let's work together on this, and let me hear what you're thinking about, not that I'm going to be able to make any valuable contribution.
Oh, I'm sure you will.
But only from the perspective of, you know, somebody who's hacking away at it. But I'd love to hear where you're going with this and how we can participate in helping.
Well, let me start with how I came up with the idea. The title of the book is going to be The 15 Gates of Golf and the Keys to Unlock Them, The Lifetime Plan for Better Golf. That's going to be the title and the subtitle.
Okay.
And you know, and it's kind of ironic how I came up with this, because I've been trying to finish two books for about 3 years now. And I go in and out of having a really bad case of writer's block. I mean, one's called The Arm Swing Illusion, Golf's Missing Link, which was my book about this sort of breakthrough discovery in terms of golf swing mechanics I came up with in 1996. And it's a big part of how we teach the mechanics of the golf swing. And the other one's basically, we call it The Art of Shot Making. It's our, you know, Mastering the Mental Game book, which is one of my favorite topics. So both of those are about 80% done, but still not quite there. Anyhow, so this past summer I was talking to some of my assistant professionals that work with me in the Balance Point Golf Schools, and a couple other friends of mine who don't work directly with me, but who are good friends of mine, who are good golf teachers and been in the golf business for years. And you know, it'd be interesting if the average golfer could ever sort of eavesdrop on the conversation between two or more well-regarded teaching professionals who are at the end of a day of teaching and they're having a beer and just letting their hair down and talking shop. It would blow your mind.
Why?
If you listen to that conversation. Well, it's sort of like, what was the name of that? Remember that book that came out in the 60s? Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex, But Were Afraid. And then there was a little asterisk, but we're afraid to ask.
Sure. Sort and then of like it turned that. Into a Woody Allen movie.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of like everything you'd like to know about golf, or rather everything your teaching professional knows about golf, asterisk, but is afraid to tell you.
Oh, interesting. But it's And I can go in two different directions with that, but what does that mean to you?
Well, it means that there's a body of knowledge that good players and good teachers have that is, for all kinds of reasons, is often not expressed or communicated in the mainstream golf media, whether it's Golf Channel or magazines or books or internet golf forums. You just don't – and that's, I'm not saying it's never talked about, but it's so little discussed that I call it esoteric knowledge, hidden knowledge, secret knowledge, as opposed to the bulk of mainstream golf media information that's out there, which is, of course, the exoteric, the knowledge in the public domain, so to speak. And I think if the average golfer could sort of get inside the head of how a good player thinks about his game and how a good teacher thinks about how he or she goes about teaching the game, it would be a huge, mind-blowing experience, and it would be very beneficial to the average golfer. I guess you could say we're talking about both content and process, but primarily process, meaning we all have perceptual filters that govern how we perceive the world, and in this case, how we perceive our golf game. And most of the time, those perceptual filters are 100% unconscious, so it's sort of like you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. But a good player knows stuff about the game, a lot of stuff, both in terms of the content and in terms of how that good player goes about strategizing or thinking about how to create a golf shot or how to shoot a lower score or how to be an effective teacher or how to be an effective practicer. That Joe Hacker, Mr. Average, you know, someone who's a 20 handicap, has no clue. And, you know, part of the reason I came up with this was not only just these discussions I was having with fellow teaching professionals and over the summer, but also it was, you know, in the last 5 years especially, I've done a lot more playing lessons with an individual student on the golf course than I used to do, doing a lot of them, tons of them lately. And I'm finding out that it's like we'll be in the first hole and I'll be observing this guy and I'll think, well, wait a minute, why is he doing that? No, you can't do that. That's the wrong club for this shot. Everybody, I'd think to myself, I'd even say it, well, everybody knows you can't use a six iron for this shot. And the guy would go, what do you mean everybody knows? And so I realized, because I grew up in golf, got to be a good player very quickly. My dad was a good player. I was surrounded by good players. That there's this body of knowledge, again, that good players have about things like course management, about the golf swing mechanics, about tempo and rhythm, about how to prepare yourself to play in a tournament, about your equipment, a whole range of things that is sort of, again, good players just sort of know this stuff. In fact, they know it so well and so clearly that it's most of it's unconscious competence for those good players. So, sure. You know, they don't talk about it. They do talk about it a little bit, but it's not – it's so obviously true that good players don't spend a lot of time going, oh, my God, did you know that I discovered something yesterday? Because good players know all this stuff. But what I'm finding in my golf schools is, and in private lessons – is that the average golfer doesn't know this body of knowledge. They don't have this way of processing information about the game in an effective way. They don't have good content.
You know, back at the turn of the century, and I mean from the 2000s, you know, from 1999 to 2000, but earlier in the decade, I used to produce a business webcast for Hewlett-Packard. Uh-huh. And we would do interviews and programming for business people. It was a business show. And one thing that somebody once said that just stood out to me, and I'll never forget this one, is that the sign of a good consultant is someone who never gives the final answer. Because once you give your client the final answer, they're not going to need you anymore. So my question is, are teachers not sharing this information with us?
But Fred, if I answer the question, that would be the final answer. There'd be nothing less to talk about.
Exactly. So are teachers not telling us this information because they don't want to lose? You know, this is their business to teach, or that they cannot verbalize it? And it takes me to another place. Is that to me, people who are excellent players are not necessarily good instructors. The best teachers to me. In school are the C students. The A's, the straight A students don't understand how it is to struggle with the content.
Yeah, that's a good point.
To me, a lot of golf instructors are guys who, like yourself, grew up around the game, grew up around great players. It comes naturally to you. You got very good very early, and you don't know what it's like to start golf when you're 40 and you're overweight and you've lost all your flexibility. You don't know what it is to struggle like this, so it's hard for you to verbalize what the hell we're going through.
Exactly right. That's a big part of it. Back to your original question, though. I don't know any golf teacher who knows stuff but is not telling their students because they're afraid they won't call them back for further instruction.
Okay.
Although that's a widely reported, sort of like an urban myth. I mean, a lot of high handicap golfers think that's just absolutely not true.
Well, of course high handicap golfers think that. My teacher sucks. He's not I'm not getting any better. Well, no, it's because you suck.
Again, it's like what you said. When you're a good player, you know, especially if you play as a kid, because when you play as a kid, probably 80% of the skills you acquire between the ages of, say, 4 and maybe 12, you acquire directly into your unconscious mind. You bypass any sort of conscious mind learning whatsoever. It's directly based on the ability of the brain to model or to imitate what you see a good player do. So when you're using modeling to learn a physical skill like the golf swing, it's literally 100% unconscious. So therefore, you can't teach it if you don't know what it is you're doing. So you're absolutely right. That's on that second point. You're absolutely correct. But having said that, there's still another body of knowledge that is conscious that good players have and good teachers have that they don't share, not because they don't want people to get better, but because they don't understand that average golfers don't already possess that information.
Yeah.
Which is mind-blowing when you think of it.
No, it makes total sense to me.
I'll give you an example. This is going to be one of our chapters in the 15 Gates. is about course management. And by the way, what I'm trying to do in this book is come up with somewhere between 3 and the maximum of 6 lessons, or you call them fundamentals, or learnings that are not overly simplistic Band-Aid quote unquote tips, which to me is just ineffective instruction, but are also not so bogged down with a lot of technical detail that each chapter would actually have to be its very own 300-page book. So kind of a medium-sized chunk of information is what I was looking for. Again, somewhere between 3 and a minimum of 6 is a max. And when I do playing lessons with people, back to the original point, I'll ask someone, let's say the guy hits his drive on an opening hole, like a medium-length par 4. It's a pretty good drive. And now he's 155 yards from the pin. And I'll say, okay, what are you going to hit here? He goes, well, I think maybe I'll try my 7-iron. I go, okay, well, how far do you hit your 7-iron? And usually they'll
go, I'll hit it perfectly.
But you'll get either two answers. One is, oh, I hit my 7-iron 155 yards. Like with dead certainty, it's always going to go 155 yards, which is wrong, which I'll explain why it's wrong in a minute. Or they'll say, I don't really know. Maybe it's 150 yards. Maybe I don't really know. And I'm like, and again, if I want to be honest here, if I wasn't trying to be diplomatic with the student, I would take my open palm and smack my forehead. Like, what, are you kidding me? You don't know how far your club goes?
You smack your own forehead.
This is what I mean. A good player knows how far the club goes.
Right.
In a very precise way. In fact, they know it goes more than one distance. So to the player, he says, it's 155. That's a 7-iron. I go, wait a minute. Well, first of all, there's a one club wind up there. Did you factor that in?
Right.
A lot of times people don't factor the wind, which is
right.
Again, smack the forehead moment.
And you're
how
in
can
the
you
rough.
Not factor the wind in, right?
And you're in the rough.
You're
in the rough. It's uphill.
All these variables.
And it's uphill.
Yeah. So what I mean is, a good player knows, first of all, before they would even begin to analyze the shot, other than the fact they know what the yardage, let's say they walked it off, there's a sprinkler head nearby, it's a 155. They're going to ask themselves questions like, okay, what's the wind doing, number one? Two, what's the lie of the golf ball? Now, in this case, it's in the fairway. But, okay, so it's in the fairway. Well, what if it's sitting down in a little 3-day-old divot that's got a little bit of grass growing in it, but it's in a little bit of a depression?
Are we talking about a 20-handicap player?
Well, I'm talking about what a good player would how a good player would.
Okay, because a 20 think about this. You know that a 20 handicap player is going to move it out of the divot. You know that.
Well, that's a whole other question. Yeah, but the point I'm trying to make is this is one of these smacking the forehead moments. A good player has all this knowledge that they just assume that everybody in golf knows.
Yeah.
And unless they do playing lessons for a living like I do, they wouldn't know that the average golfer doesn't know this.
Playing lessons are so important. That's a whole other topic we can do about playing lessons versus just getting lessons on the range.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. But here's what a good player. If I was giving the same playing lesson to a scratch player, they would say this. They'd say, okay, we know it's 155. Mm-hmm. Then they would say, okay, what's the lie? Okay, the lie's good. It's sitting up. It's even a tight lie. So for a good player, a tight lie is a good thing, because that means they can hit down more, pinch the ball first, then hit the ground, take a divot, make a solid strike, right? Then he's going to obviously factor in the wind, if any. He's going to then try to understand how – now, you don't always know this, but if you have a laser range finder or GPS, you should be able to figure this out. What's the yardage to the front edge of the green, which will tell you how much yardage you have to the pin. So let's say it's 155 to the pin and it's 135 to the front edge. You got 20 yards of green to work with, because that affects where your landing spot will be. Because you could hit a low shot in there that's going to land in the very front of the green and roll out 20 yards. You could hit a shot with a lot of backspin that's going to fly 5 yards past the hole and suck back 5 yards if you get lucky, hit it perfect. Mm-hmm. You got options, right?
Right.
But the main thing is, a good player knows he doesn't hit a 7. Let's say, I'll just give myself an example. My 7-iron, average, solidly struck, not purely struck, average solid strike is 157. Okay. If I pure it, if I hit it exactly in the sweet spot with the perfect angle of attack, perfectly on playing club shaft, right, perfect club face angle control, it'll go around 162 if I pure it.
And how often do you think that happens?
I'll pure it about 2 out of 10 times in a round of golf.
This is such now, an education.
If I do a good miss, not a bad miss, it'll be about 150. So for a good player, they know they've got about, and this is for a mid-iron, it's going to be a little bit more than this for a longer club. But for a medium-length club, for probably about a 9-iron to maybe, you know, like a 3 or 4-iron in there, they've got about a 12-yard, maybe even a 15-yard range if they're a long hitter for that club. So for me, I know my good miss where I hit it a little thin or a little off the toe or a little toward the heel, you know, missing the center of the face, it's going to be about 150 yards in the air carry. My good strike, not perfect strike, is going to go about 157, and my pure strike is going to go 162. So I know I got to, if I miss it, I hit it 150. So you know, in this case, I'm giving you, that doesn't matter. If I hit it 150, I'm still going to be fine. If I hit it 157 with an average amount of spin, it's probably going to fly 2 yards past the hole and probably dribble out another few yards. I'm still okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I pure it and there happens to be no trouble, let's say the pin's at the back of the green and there's a bunker at the back of the green. If I pure it, there's a chance it might dribble into the bunker. I got to take that into consideration, right? But what if there was water in front of the green? What if the pin was in the front of the green, still 155 to the pin, but there's only 5 yards from the front edge of the green to the pin? And there's water right there at the front of the green. Now I got to think, gee, if I miss this, a good miss, right? I'm barely going to clear the water. So which means if I'm smart, I'm not going to hit the 7-iron. I'm going to hit a 6-iron and take a little off a 6-iron. And there's various ways to do that, which gets to the other point. A good player can also hit that any club in their bag a little further or a little less than further than their normal average strike. So my average strike with 7-iron is 157. I can make it go about 10 or 12 yards less than that by doing what I call a 9 tempo. A number 10 speed or number 10 tempo is my normal average tempo. But if I want to take a little off it, I can just unwind my body at 10% slower than normal speed and take about 10 yards off the shot. If I want to add, you know, anywhere from 7 to 10 yards, it's not quite as much when you try to go a little faster. That's my 11 speed. I can nuke it. So if you talk to a good player, they'll say, well, I hit a soft 6-iron in there. That means it's about 10% less club head speed, less for sure less tempo, less body speed. Or they'll say, I nuked my 6-iron. I got a little bit more distance than normal out of it. So they can control their distances much better. And it doesn't take that much practice on the range for the average golfer to learn to do this.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting because if you remember from the PGA Championship this year, and I just happened to see on Golf Channel the other day a recap of it, the playoff between Keimer and Dennis Johnson. Dennis Johnson?
Oh, Dustin Johnson.
Dustin Johnson. Dennis Johnson played basketball. Different guy.
Yeah.
So the playoff, they were on a par 3. Johnson went first. He hit his 6-iron. And came up about 25 yards short of the pin. I mean, he came on the green, but he was not close to the pin. It was I don't know, a 35-foot shot or something. And Keimer looked at that and went, okay. So he went with a 5-iron.
He changed clubs, yeah.
He went to a different club, and he was at least 10 yards closer to the pin.
Yeah.
And you know, he just took that moment and said, aha, see, you're right.
Yep.
Thank you for the tip.
In other words, a good player's
that's why I think
trying to hit.
I think that's why I think the guy who should get honors, the guy who, you know, who has honors, should say to his opponent, no, go ahead, I have honors. Please, you go first. Let me see what you're going to do.
That's a good point. I never thought of that.
Why do I have to go first if I have honors? I don't want to go first. I want to see how you play the hall. It makes no sense to me.
You know, I never thought of that. We should suggest that to the USGA as a rule change.
We heard on a podcast. Yeah, right, exactly. They're going to listen to that. Give me a break, Jim. Okay, so here's what's going on. As I threatened, I knew that the conversation with you was going to last more than 30 minutes. I knew that we could just go on for quite a while, and we've hit our 30-minute mark here. So what we're going to do is we are going to wrap this up right now and let everybody know that I am just going to hit pause on my recorder And we are going to continue our conversation, and this will be the next part of this conversation will be part two of this conversation on next week's show, and it will be a members-only program. So if you are not a Golf Smarter member and you are fascinated by this conversation, not because of what I'm contributing, but what Jim has to say, because it's really good stuff, please check out Golf Smarter for members only and join us next week, and then you'll get full access to all of our archives. So, Jim, you don't mind hanging on the phone, do you?
Oh, not at all, not at all.
No, this is too much fun. So we're just going to continue this next week, and we'll be back. Okay, Jim, fine.
Great. I'm looking forward to it.
He's looking forward to it. Oh, I can't wait to hear the rest of this, and I hope you cannot either. Here's some good news, so that you can hear next week's show. We've broken down the barrier that allows you to become a Golf Smarter member. I've significantly lowered the price for your initial six-month membership to only $15. Now, once you join, you'll get full access to our archives and even get the chance to go back and hear the other conversations with Jim Waldron from December 18th, 2007 and August 19th, 2008. Also, you'll get to hear the conclusion of this conversation, which went on for another hour. If you live in the United States or have a U.S. address and would also like to receive a box of Dixon Wind balls, the first and only extreme distance eco-friendly golf ball, the cost to become a Golf Smarter member is only $35. Otherwise, full access to conversations with the unsung heroes of golf instruction and a new episode every week for only $15. So please go to golfsmarter.com and join Golf Smarter for members only today. For those of you who are not members, the next Golf Smarter episode is in 2 weeks. But for our members next week, another hour of conversation with Jim Waldron of the Balance Point Golf School. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.